Chapter 26. We entered the nowhere. As always, it started with a scream. Absolute darkness, broken by the eyes. White hot, they stared in the wrong direction. The more often I did this, the more I could sense the shadow of what they were. Enormous, mind-bending things whose shapes didn't conform to my understanding of how physical forms should work. I seemed to hang there for an eternity. Aside from Braid, who wouldn't talk about it, the others of my flight said they didn't sense any time at all passing in the nowhere. To them, the hyper jump happened instantaneously. They never saw the darkness or the eyes. Finally, I felt the end coming on, a subtle, fading sensation that one of the eyes turned and stared right at me. The weights and measures popped back into regular space outside of Starsight. I gasped, my pulse going crazy, battle senses coming alert. It had seen me. One of them had looked right at me. We were traveling back to Starsight after another day of training, my 10th so far in the military here. I was extra tired today from putting the others through their exercises. Was that why it had seen me? What had I done? What was wrong?
Captain Alanik, Hesho said. Though I am not familiar with your species, you do seem to be exhibiting some traditional signs of distress.
I glanced down at the kitson. Hesho's ship engineers had transformed several of the jump room seats into kitson travel stations. Basically, little buildings several stories high, secured to the wall and complete with smaller seats inside for their whole crew. They chattered together inside the open-walled structures, though Hesho had the roof all for himself and his servants. It was about eye level for me, and was set with a luxurious captain's chair. It also had a bar and several monitors for entertainment, which seemed a ridiculous amount of luxury for the short half hour or so we spent on the weights and measures each day, flying out of and back to Starsight.
Alanik? Hesho asked. I can call my ship's surgeon, who is here below. She has little experience with alien species, however. How many hearts do you have?
I'm fine, Hesho, I said. Just a sudden chill. He said, leaning back in his seat and putting his feet up.
A moment of frailty in an otherwise powerful warrior. This is a beautiful moment, which I shall treasure.
He nodded to himself, then sighed and tapped a blinking button on his armrest, causing a screen to rotate toward him. We weren't supposed to use wireless communications except in emergencies. Hesho, however, had a loose definition of the word emergency, and he had been granted, upon persistent request, a bypass for the anti-communication shield around the weights and measures. It probably wasn't polite to listen in. At the same time, he was sitting right next to me, and my pin translated and transmitted the words to my earpiece, whether I wanted it to or not. A kitson appeared on his screen, a female, judging by the pattern of light and dark fur, wearing a very formal-looking outfit of colorful silk with matching headdress. She bowed to Hesho.
Unexalted one who is not king, she said. I have called to request guidance upon my vote tomorrow in the matter of the National Taxation Fund.
Hesho rubbed the fur underneath his snout.
I fear this is not working, Senator Arya. When I spoke to our monitors at the Superiority, they claimed that I was still having undue influence upon the functioning of our Senate.
The senator looked up.
But, unexalted one, the Senate voted exactly the opposite of your expressed preference.
Yes, and they did well, he said. But the Superiority seems to think that I simply told you to vote opposite my desires, and therefore continue to manipulate you.
A difficult situation, Senator Arya said. How would you like us to proceed?
Well, Hesho said, it seems the Superiority would very much like you to choose what you would like.
My greatest desire in all of the universe is to see the king's will made manifest.
And if his will is for you to be yourself?
Of course. Which type of myself would you like?
Perhaps choose randomly how you vote each time, Hesho said. Do you think that would work?
Certainly. In that case, the superiority cannot claim we are being influenced by anything other than fate. Senator Arya bowed again. We will seek your influence upon the universe as it manifests in drawn lots to determine the vote. A wise solution, unexalted one. She cut the communication. Hesho sighed. They seem very loyal, I noted.
We are trying, Hesho said. This is difficult for us. All my life, I was taught to be very careful in how I expressed my will. But I do not know how to avoid expressing it at all.
He rubbed his temples, his eyes closed.
We must learn the superiority's way, or leave ourselves exposed to be conquered, should the humans ever return. They are my true fear. They attacked us first, during the initial human war. Their leader claimed our shared past made us practically a human colony already. Bah! My fur prickles to even speak the words. We must change to be prepared. But change is difficult. My people are not foolish or weak-willed. It is simply that for many, many centuries, the throne was the one immutable force upon which they could depend. To have it ripped away suddenly is to pull off a bandage before the wound has properly healed.
I found myself nodding, which was silly. It was better that Hesho's rule be replaced. What kind of backward culture still had a hereditary monarchy? A military stratocracy, with the strongest pilots and admirals coming to rule by proving their merits in battle, made far, far more sense. Maybe you don't need to worry so much about the humans, I said to Hesho. I mean, they might not even come back.
Perhaps, Hesho said. I was trained since I was a pup to put the needs of the planet before all else. We spent centuries seeking to recover the Shadow Walkers, but we must face the truth. We will never again have Cytonics among us. We lost that privilege long ago.
He looked to me.
Do not pity me for my loss of authority. Many years ago, my great-great-great-grandfather rode to battle at the head of our armies to fight humankind's invasion. He fought the giants with a sword. Before that, the daimyo of the 17 clans were constantly ready to lead their people in war. But I always fancied this role, being a captain of my own ship. It will be good. So long as my people do not simply vanish into the superiority, like drops of blood in an ocean.
I don't know if it's worth the effort, Hesho, I said, leaning back in my seat. All this work to bend to what they want us to be?
It's either that, or be trapped on our planets with no hyperdrives. My people have tried that, and it is stifling us. The only way to exist with any relevance is to play by the superiority's rules.
And yet, the Dions and the other primes call themselves the greater races, I said, so proud of how advanced they are, all the while basically enslaving everyone else. Hesho said, but did not reply further. I followed his glance over his shoulder. Then I blushed, seeing that Morimer was sitting right behind him. Scud. When would I learn to think a little before I spoke? Once the weights and measures had docked, Winzik gave leave for the pilots to head off to their shuttles to ride back home for the evening.
Enjoy your day off,
Hesho told me, as the Kitson flew out of our room. Morimer hurried ahead and wouldn't meet my eyes. Great. Well, it wasn't my fault their species was an oppressive group of dictators.
Hey,
Braid said as I collected my bag to leave. I glanced back at her, a little surprised to hear her speak. Normally, she didn't interact with us after the day's training was done.
Nice work today, she told me. I think this group is finally getting it.
Thanks, I said. That means a lot. Really. She shrugged and brushed past me, out the door, as if embarrassed to have been caught in a moment of sincerity. I just sat in my chair, stunned. Remarkably, it seemed I was making progress with her. Maybe I could do this. Full of newfound determination, I hurried out of the room after the others. I had work to do today. A hero can't pick her own trials. Remember that. As we reached the intersection near the engine room, I took a deep breath, then approached the guard there. MBOT was confident we could put a spy drone together and program it, but once I snuck it onto the ship here, it might take a few minutes to set up. I couldn't exactly do that with the other members of my flight around. The simplest option seemed to be the best. I need to use the restroom, I told the guard, standing watch over the path to engineering. It was a Krell, female, I thought, guessing by the carapace formations along the outside of the small crustacean piloting the armor. Understood, she answered. I'll send for a drone. Security on the weights and measures was tight. Though we could walk from the flight docks to our jump room, anywhere else we wanted to go, even if called to meet with command staff, required us to be accompanied by a watchful remote drone, piloted by some security officer. The guard, of course, didn't leave her post. Behind me, Hesho, Kauri, and several other Kitsin waited until I waved them on. Then I peeked past the guard, down the hallway. Could I come up with some way to get information out of the guard while I waited? Hey, I said. How does one get a job in the infantry? Mine is not a post for lesser species, pilot of starfighters, the guard said, moving her armored hand in several intricate motions. Be glad you are allowed the privilege of training as you do now. How is it, though? I asked. You have to stand here at this corner basically all the time. Do they at least let you go other places? Maybe,
I'm done with this conversation, she said.
Scud. I was terrible at this part of being a spy. I gritted my teeth, frustrated by my own inability, until a small drone arrived to escort me to the restroom. Our starfighters, of course, had waste reclamation facilities that hooked to our flight suits. We spent hours upon hours of time out there, after all. So far, I hadn't needed to use the facilities on the weights and measures. My heart gave a little leap of excitement as the drone led me past the guard toward the engine room. Unfortunately, we only walked a short distance before turning right into another hallway, one with several bathroom signs on the wall. Like others I'd seen, they were organized along species lines. I was directed to the one that the Dions used, as we had similar enough biology. The drone accompanied me into the bathroom, but not into the stall, so that was good. I tapped my wrist, starting a timer on my hologram bracelet to give us a rough estimate of how long all this would normally take me. Then entered the stall, dropped my backpack, and did my business. The drone pilot didn't say anything, though as I washed my hands, I heard them chatting absently with a coworker, their speaker accidentally left on. So perhaps the pilot wouldn't be paying the best of attention. The drone led me back to the hallway, where, surprisingly, I found Hesho still waiting for me, though his crew had all moved on save for Kauri and his servants, who flew on his disc with him. He hovered along beside my head as we continued on toward the shuttle docks.
Is everything well with you, Captain?
He asked. Yeah, just had to hit the restroom.
Ah.
Hesho paused, looking over his shoulder as we flew onward.
They took you down the hallway near the engine room, I see.
Closest bathroom is just to the right.
You didn't get a glimpse into the engine room itself, did you, by chance?
No, didn't go that far.
Pity.
He continued to fly.
I've heard that you have a ship of your own that can hyperjump. Just a rumor, really. Not that you should have to share such information with us.
I eyed him as he hovered along, trying to speak with feigned nonchalance. Then I found myself smiling. He was trying to figure out if I knew about superiority hyperdrives, but he wasn't any better at this sort of thing than I was. I felt a stab of affection for the furry little dictator. I don't know how their hyperdrives work, Hesho, I said softly as we entered the shuttle hangar. I'm a Cytonic,
I can teleport my ship if I have to, but doing so is dangerous. One of the reasons I'm here is so that my people can get access to the Superiority's safer technology. Hesho considered that, sharing a look with Kaori. The pickup bay was bustling with activity as pilots were loaded onto shuttles, then sent off to their individual homes on Starsight. The rest of the Kitsun were already boarding a shuttle, but Hesho, after a moment's deliberation, gestured for Kaori to hover his platform closer to my head.
"You're a shadow walker," he said. "I did not know this."
"It's not something I feel comfortable sharing," I said. "Not that I mind if you know, it's just weird."
"If this doesn't work out,"
Hesho said very softly, gesturing toward the hangar bay.
"If something goes wrong, visit my people. It has been long since we had shadow walkers among us, but some of their traditions were recorded. Perhaps your people and mine can decipher the Superiority technology."
"I'll remember that," I said. "But I'm still hoping this will work out. Or maybe I'll be able to figure..." I cut myself off. "Idiot. What are you going to do? Just tell him openly in the middle of an enemy dock that you're trying to figure out how to steal their technology?" Hesho, however, seemed to understand.
"My people," he said softly, "tried stealing Superiority technology once. This was decades ago, and is the unspoken reason why we had our citizenship status revoked for a time."
My breath caught, and I couldn't help asking, "Did it work?"
"No," Hesho said. "My grandmother was queen then, and she coordinated the theft of 3 different Superiority ships, all with hyperdrives, at the same moment. All 3, after being stolen, stopped functioning. When my people looked at the spot where the hyperdrives had been, they found only empty boxes."
"Like on Embot," I thought.
"Superiority hyperdrives," Kaori said, "teleport away if stolen, ripping themselves out of the ships and leaving the vessel stranded. It is one of the reasons why, despite centuries passing, the technology remains largely contained."
Hesho nodded.
"We found the truth of this the hard way."
"Strange," I said. "Very strange. Another obstacle to overcome."
"I have determined that the best way to help my people is to follow Superiority rules," Hesho said. "But keep my offer in mind. I feel like we are being used for something in this project. I do not trust Winzik or his department. If you return to your people, let them know of my people. We share a bond, Captain Alanik. Oppression by humans in our past, toys to the Superiority in the present. We could be allies."
"I appreciate that," I said. "You can consider me an ally, Hesho, whatever happens."
"We shall share our fate then, as equals."
He smiled a toothy grin.
"Save for when we engage the humans in war. Then I get to shoot the first one."
I grimaced.
"Ha, I'm going to take that as a promise. Take care, Captain Alanik. We will make it through these odd times together."
Kaori flew him off. And scud, I found myself sincerely wishing I were Alanik. Maybe we could accomplish something together, with the knowledge of Hesho's people, along with my people's fighting skills. Except my people were humans, the very things that frightened him into following the Superiority's strict mandates. I felt suddenly exposed, talking like that to Hesho. Sure, the docks were busy, but our conversation had flirted with treason against the Superiority. Wouldn't that just be fitting for me? To hide that I was human, but still get arrested as Alanik? What did the air smell like? Grease. Sterile cleaning fluid. Nothing suspicious. I really needed to start sniffing for Vapor's presence before I engaged in suspicious activity. I boarded a shuttle alone this time,
and flew out along the docks toward the city, where I braced myself for the music of the stars to vanish. Even prepared, I felt a sense of loss as it happened. They minimize wireless communication, but it still happens. They need it to exist. I could understand that. They had to balance fear of the Delvers with the need for societies to communicate. As I was thinking about this, something else struck me. The protesters. They were gone. I'd grown accustomed to seeing the group out here at the edge of the city, holding up signs and complaining about the rights of lesser species. But the area had been cleared of people, though some Dions in brown-striped outfits were cleaning up the refuse left behind by the protesters. "What happened?" I whispered to Embot. "To the protesters."
"They struck a deal with the government," Embot said. "Compensation to the families of those who died at the testing, and a promise to put more safety protocols in place during any such future tests."
It seemed an anticlimactic ending to the protest, a bureaucratic ending where nothing really changed. But what else had I been expecting? Riots in the streets? I sighed and watched out the back window of the shuttle, my gaze locked on that spot and the working Dions, for as long as I could see them.